Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Wood, your host, and glad to have you today as we continue a conversation that we began earlier with Dr. Danny Carroll, the Distinguished Professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary and author of the book Christians at the Border, in which he addresses the immigration issue, which I found in a very refreshing way, because he didn't get into the bomb-throwing mode, nor did he get into suggesting that it has to be this way or it has to be that way. But he attempted to lay out for us, is there a biblical perspective that should guide our thinking as we approach this issue, as we deal with the immigrant in our community, as it becomes a political issue or becomes something in which we have a say-so through our citizenship? Is there a biblically informed way that perhaps we need to bring into that forum so that the bottom line is we come up with a result that reflects somewhat what God thinks of the immigrant and the problem of immigration, and that the church is true to itself as the witness to Jesus Christ and a witness to the gospel and grace in the world, which maybe at times we haven't exactly been that. So, Dr. Carroll, it's glad to have you back with us. Let's pick right up where the last program tended to end and kind of review a little bit. You started your discussion about the Old Testament. So talk about what the Old Testament had to say about immigration and maybe some of the immigration stories from the Old Testament.
Well, thanks, Larry. And again, I appreciate you having me on. Yes, I mean, the Old Testament begins, of course, with creation and humans all made in the image of God. And it tells us the value of every human being and the potential of every human being. And I think that's where the immigration discussion should begin. But it's also very interesting to see how many stories of the Bible reflect these realities. And let me just give you a couple. Here's one. When Abram comes into Canaan, Genesis 12, he gets the call for his mission to be a blessing to the world, and that's all good. And the first thing he does is build an altar and call the name of God, and that's all very good. But very quickly in Genesis 12, you find him in the midst of a famine, and he takes his extended family, and he was the leader of a clan, so he has many mouths to feed, and he goes to Egypt looking for food. And, of course, what you're seeing is what migration is about. It's about food. It's about taking care of your family. And there he goes to Egypt to feed his family. And it's interesting that he's willing to lie to get across that border and that his wife is willing to do the same and to put herself at risk, all to feed the family. Because one option is to lie and to survive. The other option is to turn back and go into the desert and die. I mean, so what you're seeing is the same kind of phenomenon we get, where you have desperate people doing desperate things. Another interesting story is Joseph, of course, who's sold and forced to migrate by his brothers who hate him. And he ends up in Pharaoh's court, but it's interesting that when his brothers come, again, looking for food, they don't recognize him. And it's easy to understand why. He obviously spoke Egyptian by this time. He had married an Egyptian woman, had Egyptian children with this Egyptian woman. But it's interesting that he gives them Israelite names. And when they speak to him, he understands what they're saying, even though he uses the ruse of having an interpreter there with him. So what you're seeing is this immigrant who is assimilated very, very much into Egyptian culture and works in the Egyptian government, but who still knows his language and can use it. He still gives his children names from his own culture. And then he tells the Egyptians, you know, when I die, I want to be buried back in my homeland. So again, you're seeing these deep, deep roots, even though he's been living in Egypt for decades. Egypt is an interesting story. Exodus chapter 1, where if you read the narrative carefully, what happens is that the Israelites reach a number, a threshold that frightens the Egyptians. And what they decide to do then is population control, right? And they're going to do this very cruelly by killing the little boys. But what you're seeing is this very natural knee-jerk fear of the foreigner, especially if they get to be too many. And what you then see is that they begin to put in measures to control that population, even as they want them to keep working, which is interesting. I mean, that kind of tension, even in this country, where we need immigrant labor in construction, especially in farming and agriculture, and in the service industries, even as we try to control that population. Another story that we can think about is it comes from the book of Daniel, which is a familiar story to everybody. But oftentimes we haven't thought about it from an immigrant point of view. But what you have are young men who are the cream of the crop in Jerusalem who are taken to Babylon, so now they're in a foreign place. They change their names to Babylonian names. They give them the very best of Babylonian education. And these young men rise to the top, and they are the top of the class. But it's interesting that what they ask is that they keep their food, which is an important cultural marker. When I take students to Guatemala, usually after a few days, they begin to beg me to go to a McDonald's, you see, because they want, quote-unquote, American food. And you can always know when you're in an immigrant part of town by looking at the restaurants. And so what you find Daniel and his friends doing is clinging to this very fundamental part of their culture. Of course, it was wrapped up in their religion. But the point was is that this is their food. This is their marker. They weren't going to negotiate away who they were. And this also was their religion, you see, because they're even willing to die for their God. So what you're seeing are these young immigrant men with their cultural markers and their cultural convictions. You look at the difference between them, who become very assimilated in the government, with someone like Ezra, who wants nothing to do, you know, with Babylon, and he actually goes back, you know, to the Promised Land, versus someone like Nehemiah, you see, who works for the king, but he goes back to his homeland for a while, and he goes back to serve the king again. So what you see in these exile stories are different levels of assimilation going on. Someone like Esther, actually, if you read the story carefully, you'll see that she actually has two names. She has a Jewish or Hebrew name and a Persian name. And her relative, Mordecai, has to kind of remind her about her roots. And through her remembering and beginning to act on her cultural roots, she actually saves her people. And, of course, to this day, the Jews celebrate the Feast of Purim, which remembers that Esther account. So what you find in the Old Testament are just a large number of migrant or immigrant stories of people living in foreign lands.
You know, I'm sitting here listening, Dr. Carroll, to what you're saying, and I'm trying to process it like maybe a member of our audience. And they might be saying to themselves, well, hey, that's all well and good. That's the Bible, but this is the 21st century. And it dawned on me, would you suggest to them that maybe the way they should respond to this is to understand that what's going on today is something that's been going on from the dawn of history, and we need to kind of get into the rhythm of what that's all about and perhaps change our perspective?
I think that's fundamental. I think what people need to realize, and I mentioned this in the earlier show, Larry, is that the history of humanity is the history of migration. And the history of this country is the history of immigrants, and continues to be. And the thing that the Old Testament will do in its law is to remind the people over and over again to remember Egypt, to remember what it was like to live as a foreigner in a different place. And what we have in this country, we have some immigrant memories. I mean, we have St. Patrick's Day, we have Oktoberfest, all these kinds of things, which are, if you think about it, they're immigrant memories, you see. St. Patrick's Day, it's wearing green and, you know, for some people, you know, drinking green beer or something. But that's an immigrant memory. And in our homes, you know, we might have a recipe from Aunt Martha, who was Austrian, and we keep it in the family. But what you're seeing is the memory is reduced to food and, you know, having a good time. But the memory part of the hard times of any immigrant group into this country, whether the Italians or the Irish or the Germans or even now the Hispanics, of being in ghettos, of wrestling with language and being accepted and or being marginalized, the hard stories of our immigrant history, which are the things that God did not want Israel to forget, because once you forget those things, if I can use a biblical metaphor, you become the Egyptians. And this is what can happen. We've forgotten those hard stories of our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers, or our, in my case, my mother. You see, and once we forget the hard part, that's when we lose our heart for the immigrant.
Would you say that when you read these immigrant stories in the Bible, you can walk away with one conclusion, and that is that the bad guys were the ones who mistreated the immigrant? That throughout these stories, God was on the side of the vulnerable and the oppressed, and it was the oppressors that he opposed throughout those stories.
Yeah, and when you say that, you don't idealize these biblical characters. I mean, you know, when Abram goes into Egypt, well, you know, he's not a saint, and of course he has Lot with him, and I mean, the Bible does not idealize the immigrant, but what it does do is call us to be gracious and generous, and to be sensitive to the vulnerability of the immigrant, because they will be sinners just like you and me, and they will have shortcomings just like, you know, you and me, and so there's a realism in the Bible, even as there is a moral call to greater acceptance of the foreigner.
I was sitting here thinking, too, that it would be helpful to me and perhaps any one of our listeners to try to get out of our own culture and to process in our own mind, what would it be like if I could not feed my family, I could not provide for my family, but there was a place where I could? Would I go there?
Well, you know, I was in a church in Denver here a while ago, and one of the things you have to appreciate about Colorado is that most people who live in this state are not from here. And so I was in this church, and it was a large church of maybe 400 people. And so I asked how many people had come from elsewhere. And I bet you 350 hands went up. And I said, well, see, why did you come? Well, you came for another job. You came to start again. You came for a new life. I said, what you did was very human. You could do it because it was within your own country and you have the money to make the move and the connections to make the move. But what I was saying was this: the same phenomenon of your own moving for a new life is the very same phenomenon you have with people who are crossing national borders. And the United Nations tells us that over 200 million people are migrating worldwide. This is a global phenomenon. This is not just a U.S. issue.
Well, our guest today is Dr. Daniel Carroll, professor of Old Testament, Denver Seminary, author of the book Christians at the Border. We're going to be back in 2 minutes after the break, and we're going to talk about, get into some specifics. Dr. Carroll is a member of some organizations that have published some things recently on the immigration issue, and we're going to talk about those, to talk about, well, what is being done on perhaps from the church to address the immigration issues. So come back to us. We'll be here in 2 minutes. Join us again on Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
This is the Armed American Radio Network. Here again, Mark Walters.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Armed American Radio Network. Check us out next week. Going to be a good one, I promise you. I'm your host, Mark Walters. Check us out at armedamericanradio.org. See you next week.
Armed American Radio, Sunday nights at 8 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
Before we rejoin today's program, let me say thank you for listening to Peace Talk. Each program comes with the prayer that you will find the peace that Jesus desires for you to enjoy today. But I'd like to take a minute to tell you about the website, peacetalk.com. Go to peacetalk.com and you'll discover that Peace Talk is more than teaching and great stories. We offer opportunities for bringing Peace Talk to you and your church. If you're caught in relationship-destroying conflict, at peacetalk.com you can access relationship-restoring services. You will also find seminar retreat opportunities for your group. And at peacetalk.com you can read the blog and sign up for our free email newsletter, Peace Mail. Follow us on Peace Talk and Twitter. And please, don't overlook the donate button, because Peace Talk needs your help. Peace Talk is all about you finding peace. Let's rejoin our program, and remember, Peace Talk is your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Woods, your host, and our guest today has been Dr. Dan Carroll, Distinguished Professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary and author of the book Christians at the Border, in which he gives us some insight on a biblical perspective of the immigration issue, who the sojourner is in the world, and how we might be thinking about them from a particularly biblical perspective. If you want to hear, this is actually the second program we've done with Dr. Carroll. So if you go to www.peacetalk.com, click on the radio archive, you can get program number one, where we laid out more of the biblical philosophy than we have here in program number two. And we invite you to go back to the website and pick up the first discussion on the immigration issue. It'll help set some of the framework, some of the background for the conversation that we've had now. But Dan, let's go ahead and pick it up now. We're down to the last part of our discussion. Tell us and our audience, what's actually happening in America? What are some of the organizations, some of the things that are actually being done to address the immigration issue that our listeners may not be aware of?
Well, what you're seeing, Larry, nationally is that just about every major denomination is making statements kind of pushing for some kind of reform to immigration law and a more openness toward the sojourner, to the immigrant. And you can go to this and see this with Evangelical Free Church, with Southern Baptist, the Assembly of God, the Wesleyan Church, and I can go on and on. So if you go to these denominational websites, you'll actually begin to find these kinds of resources. What you also find are other evangelical associations that have come around the issue. One is the Evangelical Immigration Table. You go to evangelicalimmigrationtable.com and begin to see the long list of prominent evangelical leaders that have signed that document. And there's other websites I could point you to, like undocumented.tv would be another one. Another one would be faithinimmigration.org, and these are all kind of evangelical immigration efforts. So you're seeing that, and I'm a part of what's called the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, NHCLC, and their website is nhclc.org. This is the Hispanic equivalent to the National Association of Evangelicals. And I am the national spokesperson for immigration for the NHCLC. But what you're seeing there is a grouping of about 40,000 Hispanic churches nationwide, and a lot of major denominations and seminaries and universities are now connected to the NHCLC as supporting members, all of them pushing for immigration reform from a biblical and specifically evangelical point of view.
Well, let's talk about the immigration table. Evangelical Immigration Table, because they recently issued six criteria that they were encouraging our legislators to consider in crafting immigration reform legislation. So let's talk about those things. I believe the first one was that whatever we do as a matter of law, that we must respect the God-given dignity of every person. Would you comment on that and then the other criteria and how important these viewpoints might be?
Well, let me go to really the fundamental question that all Bible-believing Christians have to ask themselves, and it's this. What do they expect the Bible to give them on this issue? And what I would tell people is the Bible will not give us legislation to imitate. I mean, there is Old Testament law, but we're not going to put into practice ancient Near Eastern law that was made for Palestine, you know, 2,000-3,000 years ago. So what the Bible will do for us is give us a moral orientation, a moral compass, if you will, on the issue. And that's why when you go to the Bible, you begin with the beginning. You begin with this idea of the image of God, because whatever legislation you do will have a moral compass to it. See, is legislation punitive? Meaning it is fundamentally against the immigrant and will try to control and force them out? Or will you look at immigrants as people of value and of potential? And that's a major divide. And then if you take that stance grounded in Genesis 1, the legislation that you will craft will be constructive and facilitating and take into account how they might contribute to the common good. So that's where you begin, and that's why you begin with the image of God and the value of every human being.
It seems like that one view is designed to protect the status quo or what we thought it was or to preserve the past. The other view, when you respect human dignity, is you're looking to the possibilities of the future and what people can contribute and what your country could be in a good way.
Well, you know, and I think the question needs to be framed differently for Christians. And let me give you this, Larry. In a world where over 200 million people are migrating worldwide for food and work, what does it mean to be the church? See, that's a very different question than putting the national question first. And it seems to me that as Christians, we've got to put that kind of Christian question first. And now, if you begin with those kinds of questions, you see, then you begin to ask yourself, okay, if this is a global problem to which the church must respond, and our particular church happens to live in this particular country, the United States, what kind of legislation should we try to promote that would actually begin to respond to the needs of a very vulnerable population, whether you're talking Africans, whether you're talking Caribbeans, whether you're talking Middle Easterners, Canadians, Koreans. Most people don't realize about one out of every five or six Koreans is in this country illegally. They don't come across the border. They come in as students and just overstay their visas. I mean, it's a very complicated issue, you see. But you begin to ask different kinds of questions, and if you ask different kinds of questions, the whole tone and direction of the conversation will change.
Well, comment on that, if you would, because I noticed in your book, Christians at the Border, that you were even concerned and careful to the expressions we actually use. You know, illegal alien, undocumented immigrant, that the very terminology we use can actually positively or negatively influence how we resolve some of these questions or how we approach them. And then tell us why you have a favorite term and how it helps you.
Well, let me just talk about alien, for instance. In English, this isn't the case in Spanish, but in English, we use that for outer space creatures, you see. In fact, you won't believe this, but when I first came here to Denver, this is several years ago, I was teaching in the book of Isaiah, and Isaiah, in the version we were using, uses the word alien, and a student came up to me and said, "Dr. Carroll, you mean there's aliens in the Bible?" And, of course, he was probably thinking Star Wars or something. But, you see, when I asked audiences, when I speak to them, I ask them, I said, when does an alien become a human being, you see? Even the word says they're strange and they're different and they're not one of us, you see. If you use the word immigrant, then you're just talking about a person who just happens to be from somewhere else. In terms of the word illegal, well, I guess technically they're illegal because they don't have documents. You know, it's actually a misdemeanor under U.S. law, not a felony. But, you know, even then people will get angry just because the word, you know, kind of triggers emotions. And basically all these people are missing is a document. So I prefer to say undocumented immigrant versus illegal alien, which you put those two together, it can be pretty pejorative.
So you're saying that actually the conversation, if it began right there at terminology, we might start from a more neutral terminology, which would help us better frame the real issues.
Well, you know what I try to do is I just try to lower the kind of the emotions in the room. You see, you know, what we need to do is kind of step back, take a deep breath, and let's just kind of work our way through this. I mean, if we begin with these kind of loaded terms, you know, we're kind of doomed from the beginning, you see, especially as Christians. We should have a different tone to our conversation.
One of the second criteria that the Evangelical Immigration Table put out was that whatever legislation we pass, it should protect the unity of the family. Mm-hmm. And I know that that is one of the hardest issues, because if we were to carefully and rigidly enforce the law, we'd end up sending children would stay in America, perhaps parents would go home, and we would just completely destroy families.
Well, I've actually seen that in the church that I attend on Sunday afternoons, which is an Hispanic immigrant church. And we've had, I'm thinking of one particular husband who was picked up. He wasn't breaking the law. He didn't have a license because in Colorado, the undocumented immigrants can't get it. He was just, you know, driving back from work. He works. He's a roofer. He works construction. And the police started following him, waiting for him to make some kind of mistake to pull him over. And he didn't. But after several blocks, they pulled him over anyway, and they took him away. And, you know, there's a big detention center here in Aurora, Colorado, which is part of Metro Denver, and that was full. So they sent him to Colorado Springs, and finally he was able to make a phone call and tell his wife. And the church got together money to pay for his release until the court date. But what you're seeing is that kind of thing happened, where a father or a mother, there was a raid at a meatpacking plant up in Greeley outside of Denver a few years ago now. But what happened was mothers and dads were working at the meatpacking plant together. ICE agents came in and took both parents away, and all of a sudden children who were in school were left without either parent. And all of a sudden, what you find in Hispanic churches is now the church begins to take care of the children. So it's a very different kind of pastoral work, you see. Or a mother is gone, or a father is gone. And so now the church begins to try to rally around these families. And part of your pastoral work now is going to detention centers. I've been to immigration court several times with, you know, a friend of mine who's in process. So it's a very different kind of thing. And what we're finding among immigrant families is a higher incidence of drug and alcohol abuse because of the stress levels that are going on in some of these immigrant families.
Well, Dr. Carroll, we're coming down to the end of the program, so we do need to wrap it up. I wish we had a lot more time, and we'll see if we cannot at some point schedule another interview with you. But what's the takeaway for right now as we wind up the program? What would you encourage a listener to Peace Talk to do to become more aware or to become more understanding of this immigration issue and even more active in its resolution?
Well, we mentioned this in an earlier program, Larry, but I would say the same thing. I think the first thing is get to know an immigrant, and it won't be easy. It may be very awkward, and that's just very natural. So let the awkwardness happen, because it's going to happen, and, you know, get past some of the emotional barriers that are going to go both ways, because, you know, an immigrant may be suspicious or scared of you. So, but that's the first piece. Get to know some people. And the second thing is get informed. I've mentioned some websites a few minutes ago, like the Evangelical Immigration Table. But also, you know, read the book. You know, that would be helpful. Just begin to read the Bible on this, and let the Bible do its work as well.
Our guest today has been Dr. Daniel Carroll, Distinguished Professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary and author of the book Christians at the Border. And Danny, we thank you for what you've brought to us to help open our minds to this issue, to help inform us in some way. And of course, it's a big job and it's still in front of us. And we as a church need to be the church to the stranger that's among us. So thank you, Dr. Carroll, for being our guest today. And thank you, our audience, for being a part of Peace Talk and for enjoying this time, I trust, and being encouraged and helped by it. So join us again, because this is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.